We're doing in Yaakov, we're up to its, in the regular editions, it's Yud Aleph Amud Beis. In the Gemara, it's actually Daf Chaf Vav. The Gemara quotes, "Midalut ha'aretz eshir nevuzaradan rav tabachim lechomim liyogvim." When the Jews were exiled from Judea, so then Nebuzaradan, the chief executioner, the general, he left some Jews behind with the responsibility that they would be koremim and yogevim. What are koremim? Koremim, Tani Rav Yosef, Eru Menaktei Afarsemon Mein Gedi. Vadramta. Koremim were those who were responsible for picking that luscious fruit that grew in Israel called Afarsemon. Some say it's a persimmon, I'm not sure it really is. There was a special fruit called an Afarsemon, and they wanted to have that fruit imported into Babylon. So they left these people with the responsibility to harvest that fruit. What are Yogevim? Elu tzaydei chilazon mesulamot shetzorat Haifa. Those were the people whose responsibility it was to harvest the chilazon, whatever that is, that's some type of a sea creature, which can produce a fantastic blue dye, royal blue dye. And so they wanted, again, to import that royal blue dye into Babylon. So they left behind these people whose responsibility it was to harvest this dye all the way down from Sulamot Shel Tzur, all the way up the harbor till Haifa. So the Talmud says that we had a tremendous abundance of chilazon here in Israel at the time of the temple. And so these people were left behind to mass produce the blue dye, obviously to be exported or imported into Babylon. Rabbi Tarfon omer en madikin el b'shem zayit bilvad. We have different opinions about which oils can be used on Shabbos. Rabbi Tarfon, who started off life in poverty, but then became very wealthy, he was a Kohen, he said you could only light with olive oil. Amad Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri al raglav v'amar. Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri stood up on his feet and said, how could you say that? What are they going to do in Babylon? All they have is cottonseed oil. Maybe it's a sesame oil. The people of Mead, they only have walnut oil. What do they do out in Alexandria where all they have is the oil they produce from the seed of turnips, of radishes? What are they going to do out in the city of Kaputkia? All they have is neft, which is some kind of oil, some kind of lighter fluid. So he turned to Rabbi Tarfon and said, you can only disqualify those things that we have in our Mishnah, that our sages disqualified. You can't hold everyone up to that high standard of olive oil. Can't say that. So the Talmud has a discussion. What was the tachash in the days of Moshe? We know there was some kind of animal whose hides were used to cover the Mishkan. The upper layer of the Mishkan was of the hides of the tachash, and also the vessels that were carried were encased when we were traveling. They were also covered with the hide of tachash. So what was it? What kind of animal was it? Amar Rabbi Ila, Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish. The quote is in the name of Rabbi Meir. Omer haya Rabbi Meir. Tachash haya bimei Moshe Rabbeinu. Beriya bifnei atzmaya. That tachash was a unique animal. It's not like anything we know of today. And our sages have no definitive decision as to whether it was a wild animal or a domesticated animal. And it was a creature that had one horn in its forehead. And ordinarily it's hard to come by in the desert. It's an animal that most people do not encounter in their lifetimes. But Moshe Rabbeinu was afforded that generosity from heaven, that the animal was made available to him at that time. And so he used it to create the Mishkan. Vinignaz. And then the Tachash went into hiding. It became extinct. So here there's a big question, because in the prophet Yechezkel, we have a discussion of things made of tachash, And the question is it the same Tachash? Is Ezekiel speaking back to the days of the Mishkan? Is it something that really you could find, only it's very hard to find? Like the Talmud said, Nignaz, it became extinct, but that doesn't mean it's non-existent. Okay, there's a Medrash Tanchuma that says that it was created for that time and then it disappeared. So that certainly sounds like there are none left today. But our Talmud, our line in Talmud is not obvious. It's not so clear that there are no more Tachash running around. Could be you just got to find them. They're hidden in the desert. The Talmud deduces, if it had only one horn in its forehead, that would seem to indicate it's a pure animal. Because Rav Yehuda taught, when Adam brought a sacrifice, that ox which he brought as a sacrifice had only one horn coming out of its forehead. The verse says, God will love it even more than that ox that has a horn before its hooves. What does that mean? First of all, the Talmud says, Makrin certainly sounds like it has two horns. Makrin tati mashma. Amar Nachum Bar Yitzchak mikeren k'tiv. Being that there is no yud there, it's, you should read it like mikeren, from one horn. So, what's it talking about when it says the horn before its hooves? So, our sages said that the animal that Adam brought as a sacrifice was different than any other animal. Ordinarily, an animal forms in utero. So it forms in its mother's womb, and the whole body evolves and develops. The animal that Adam sacrificed was an animal that was created. So the Talmud's way of saying it was created by God is saying that the horn came before the hooves. As though, if you can imagine, the horn starts being created and then slowly the rest of the body evolves from the horn. You're creating an order. It's like drawing an animal, right? You can begin with the horn and draw the rest of it as you go along. So by the same token, this animal was created by God from the horn coming down to the hooves. And that's why it's called Makrin Mafris. The horn up to the hooves. That's how our sages understood. Yeah?
Wouldn't one horn animal be considered blemished?
I guess not. I don't know. If God created it, I guess it's not a blemish. I don't know. Velishot minad min beimau. So the Talmud says if you're going to learn from that animal, so then Adam's animal was an ox, was a behemoth. And says the Gemara, kevandika keresh, being that we have a unicorn. Not a unicorn. What do they call that animal that looks like a rhinoceros? A rhinoceros has one horn in the middle of its forehead, right? And that's a wild animal. Demin chayahu, that a rhinoceros is a wild animal. Velet leilachad karna, and that also has one horn. So then ikalameima min chayahu. So then you don't know if the tachash was a wild animal, like the rhinoceros, or a domesticated animal like the ox that Adam had. We see both in nature, or we heard of one and we see the other. So we don't know. The Talmud says, bottom line, we don't know. But we do know it was a kosher animal. And that's relevant because we say that only kosher animals can be used for the service of Hashem. And that's the idea that our tefillin are also made, everything's made from a kosher animal. It doesn't have to be slaughtered. Meaning we use hares, we use cow's hairs. Where do we get the tails of cows? We get them from the non-kosher butcher. We get them from these mass butcher shops out in the Midwest, where we get like 15 tails of cows for $10 or something, and then we clean them and we use them for tying up our tefillin and stuff. They didn't slaughter the animal in a kosher way. It doesn't matter. It came from a kosher animal. The hides we used to write tefillin, they weren't necessarily from kosher animals, but they weren't necessarily from kosher slaughtered animals. It has to be from a kosher animal. It doesn't have to be from an animal that was slaughtered and was edible. So that's this idea. And so too the tachash, which was used in the Mishkan, was a kosher animal.